With your Superhuman News Update, I'm Elliot Turton. Industry lobbying boils over in bid to block labeling of genetically engineered food. Companies and organizations opposed to labeling foods that contain genetically engineered ingredients disclose $15.2 million in lobbying expenditures that made reference to GE labeling in the second quarter of 2014, according to analysis updating a July EWG report. When combined with lobbying expenditures from the first quarter of 2014, these companies have disclosed $27.5 million in the first half of 2014 that made reference to GE labeling, nearly three times as much as they disclosed in all of 2013. GE labeling opponents also spent $67.9 million to defeat ballot initiatives in California and Washington. The burst of lobbying by food and biotechnology companies was partly designed to muster congressional support for legislation that could block states from requiring GE labeling on food packages. Fathers smoking prior to conception could increase asthma risk for baby. A baby has a higher risk of asthma if his or her father smoked prior to conception. The research presented at the European Respiratory Society International Congress in Munich is the first study in humans to analyze the link between a father's smoking habits before conception and a child's asthma. The findings add to growing evidence from animal studies which suggests that father's exposure before parenthood could harm his child. The study analyzed the smoking habits of over 13,000 men and women via a questionnaire, and the results showed that non-allergenic asthma, without hay fever, was significantly more common in children with a father who smoked prior to conception. The risk of asthma increased if a father smoked before the age of 15, and this risk grew the longer the duration of smoking. The researchers observed no link between mother smoking prior to conception and a child's asthma. The rest of your Superhuman News is coming up in 1 minute on the Superhuman Radio Network.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. 861-4936, wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Just because your water is clear doesn't mean it's pure. You can't see the most harmful things in your water. Tap, bottle, it's all the same. Plasticizer, chlorine, fluoride. Today's water is horrible. The clearly filtered water bottle will purify up to 100 gallons of tap, bottle, river, or stream water, and it removes chlorine, fluoride, other harmful chemicals, and bacteria while saving you a load of money. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the clearly filtered banner ad and save 5% plus free shipping inside the USA.
This is the rest of your Superhuman News Update. I'm Elliot Turton. Double mastectomies don't yield expected results. More women are choosing to have bilateral mastectomies when they are diagnosed with early-stage breast cancer, even though there's little evidence that removing both breasts improves their survival compared with more conservative treatments. The largest study yet on the question has found no survival benefit with bilateral mastectomy compared with breast-conserving surgery with radiation. The study, published in the Journal of American Medical Association, looked at the records of all women in California who were diagnosed with early-stage breast cancer from 1998 to 2011, nearly 190,000. Women who had breast-conserving surgery had an 83.2% survival rate at 10 years compared with 81.2% for those who had a double mastectomy. That meant that women who had breast-conserving surgery, also known as lumpectomy, did better and also avoided the risk of major surgery and the loss of a healthy breast. The study also looked at women who had single mastectomy, which was the least popular option. They fared worse, with a 79.9% survival rate, enough to be statistically significant. One factor affecting these women could be lack of access to medical care. For instance, a woman who has breast-conserving surgery typically has to go for radiation every day for 6 weeks to kill remaining cancer cells. Lower-income women may have a hard time doing that. Doctors have been increasingly concerned that women are choosing bilateral mastectomies in the mistaken belief that it eliminates their future risk of cancer. Double mastectomies made headlines in 2013, when actress Angelina Jolie had a prophylactic double mastectomy after being diagnosed with a BRCA gene mutation that vastly increases cancer risk. But 95% of breast cancers aren't caused by BRCA mutations, And most of the women who are choosing double mastectomies haven't been diagnosed with a BRCA mutation. This has been your Superhuman News Update. I'm Elliot Turton for the Superhuman Radio Network.
Everyone knows how important staying hydrated is for your health, but have you ever thought about what's in the water you're drinking? Truth is, it's not good. Stop second guessing and get the Clearly Filter pitcher filter and drink with confidence, knowing that your water is pure. Clearly filtered water filters eliminate dozens of harmful contaminants that can keep you from achieving optimal hydration and peak performance. Don't put up with mediocre water. You deserve better. Click the Superhuman Radio banner ad now and get an exclusive SHR package discount and free shipping.
Weight Isolate is the fastest way to build muscle by flooding the bloodstream with bodybuilding amino acids. Now, Divine Nutrition gives you the best flavors in the world of the best whey isolate available. Divine Nutrition's Whey Isolate comes in pumpkin spice, vanilla peanut butter, or cinnamon bun. You can save 30% off a 2.5-pound jug by using the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and look for Divine Nutrition in Carl Recommends today.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back. It's a new week here at Superhuman Radio. We're starting the week off with a great show. During the first hour, I'm going to be joined by James Earls to talk about his book, Born to Walk, Myofascial Efficiency and the Body in Movement. Then we're going to change it up, but keep it the same. Can your dog help extend your life? We're going to be talking to Dr. Carrie Westgarth about that topic a little bit later in the show. But first, let's get started. James Earls, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much, Carl. Thanks for the introduction. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah, so what made you write this book? I mean, walking seems so, what's the word I'm looking for? Ubiquitous or, I mean, everybody walks. Why write a book about it? We all can do it.
It came out of my frustrations. I'm a body worker. I'm trained in massage therapy and an approach, myofascial approach called structural integration, where we really look at the body in its entirety. And, you know, it's a very holistic approach. But whenever I looked at anatomy books and a lot of there are long physical therapy books looking at walking and gait, and every time I read them, they were very detailed but very and specific about individual parts. So you get a lot of information about the toes, a lot of information about the ankle, maybe about the hip, and very few, if any, of them actually looked at the whole body. So there's a very common physical therapy theory that would describe the body in two sections whenever we look at walking. And everything in the lower body would be described as a locomotor, mm-hmm. and everything above as the passenger. So they even have a kind of acronym for it. So they call it the HAT. The head, arms, and trunk are carried around by the locomotor passenger, or sorry, by the locomotor unit. And to me, it was very unsatisfying. There was a lack of truth in uh-huh. that the upper body is very passive in walking, whereas whenever I look at the slightly different way in which we approach the anatomy in our school, we look at the full body connections within the soft tissue. And so it was really out of a frustration with a lot of the literature that kind of drove me to writing the book and doing a little bit more research to be able to verbalize it and hopefully make sense of it. So I kind of mapped it out within the book. And so the book was very much a kind of catharsis process of getting that story out for me.
Well, you know, and actually the question for me was a bit rhetorical, and the reason I say that is because through our evolution, you know, one of the greatest accomplishments of our evolution, which was quite a setback in the beginning, was our ability to ambulate on two legs. When we became bipeds, And this is why I think it is important to talk about walking, right? So
yep.
Walking gave rise to the rest of our body. It changed the length of our rib cage. It changed the length of our spine. It changed the geometry of our hips. It forced us to develop an arch. It made so many of the parts of our body above our feet changed when we for whatever reason we decided standing erect gave us some sort of an advantage, because it gave us many disadvantages. We were much faster when we were on all fours. I mean, when you look at a chimpanzee can hit, 25 miles an hour in two strides. We could barely do that. A chimpanzee can turn at that speed on a dime. We would fall over. We were at a great disadvantage. So clearly this must have given us some intrinsic advantage that we struggled with it, and our body adapted to our desire to walk. So I think it is important to look at walking. We take it for granted, in fact.
Absolutely, and many people have had different theories as to what that advantage may have been. So some people say whenever we stood up, there's less exposure to the sun, or we could see over the grasses in the savanna. And so part of I suppose my thesis within the book is actually by standing up, we gained a lot of efficiencies. So we actually we can walk, we can ambulate, we can progress.
I personally have to believe, and I don't know if this is one of the theories, but I personally have to believe that when we stood up, we were more imposing to all the other animals. We were doing something that they couldn't do, and we were taller and more imposing, and therefore we maybe didn't have to fight. Maybe when we were in an altercation, our standing up, like a horse rearing up on its hind legs and ready to strike, you would be more afraid than if it was on all four. That alone may have been the value, because I think that we had to learn to stand and walk in order to take advantage of, as you point out, not being baked by the sun like other animals. In fact, that led to our ability to do something called persistence hunting, where we were able to go for long distances when other animals would collapse, and then we would grab them and cook them and eat them.
Absolutely, yeah. So certainly, I'm sure we'd be much more imposing. Even some cats, some dogs, even come up onto their back legs to get a little bit of extra height.
Right.
So yeah, that's a new theory for me. But thank you for that one. So I think sometimes for us, by standing up, it allowed us to walk and eventually also to do the running that Dan Lieberman would put forth within his theory as well. So it allows us to engage the soft tissue, and that's probably the difference between what I'm trying to achieve within the book and some of the other theories, that because of the fossilization process, the soft tissue gets lost. And so we have to analyze the bones.
Uh-huh.
And so it's by implication, by looking at the joints and the different angulations, that we can, I think, interpret some of the ways in which we're able to use the soft tissue in a slightly different way. So we become differently efficient from the chimpanzees, from the jaguars, the leopards, the tigers, whatever, or either our predators or our prey might be. So it's being able to stand and being able to ambulate on two legs just gives us so many different potentials. So less exposure to the sun, freeing up the hands for manipulation, which eventually led to the control of fire and the development of tools. So it gave us so much, and many people have tried to hang their hat on one advantage, but I think it just gave us so many
that
it was kind of difficult to go back onto all fours.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, here's what I want to do. I want to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I want to actually talk about what people will get from the book. We're talking right now with James Earls about his book, Born to Walk, Myofascial Efficiency and the Body in Movement. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We're going to take one quick commercial break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In a world of advanced bodybuilding supplementation, the numbers don't lie. Fact, Iron Mag Labs is among the fastest growing hardcore supplement companies in the world. Fact, when it comes to no-nonsense, cutting-edge products, nobody delivers results like Iron Mag Labs. Fact, the Iron Mag Labs line of innovative formulation has set a new industry standard with products that are helping world-class bodybuilders reach levels they never thought possible. Iron Mag Labs is a proud supporter of bodybuilders everywhere. Discover the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements on the market. Visit IronMagLabs.com today.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Keto Force is the first ketone salt that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Force and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Force banner ad today.
Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes.
When you talk about recovery,
one product has emerged as the established category killer, MassPro Synthogen, formulated by SHR's own BPPH answer man, Rob Regish. Synthogen works from the very first dose to help you bounce back fast. It fuels, it feeds, and flat out outperforms anything else on the market. Discover the power yourself by clicking the Synthogen link in the Carl Recommends tab on superhumanradio.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Shake that thing, miss. Can I shake that thing? Welcome back. My guest this hour is James Earls. You can get the book at superhumanradio.com on the front page. It's called Born to Walk, Myofascial Efficiency and the Body in Movement. So what will people get from the book, James?
Okay, so I've written the book really with the therapist in mind, whether they be a physical therapist, chiropractor, osteopath, massage therapist, Pilates, yoga instructor, anybody who's looking for a complete understanding or a more holistic approach to anatomy. And it's really looking at why maybe a stiff toe would influence or create hip problems, why a hip problem would create a low back problem, a shoulder problem. So it's really looking at the interrelationships throughout the body, and it's mapped through a process that one of my teachers calls anatomy twins. It's looking at how the soft tissue, the myofascia, is continuous in certain lines through the body. So it's really giving a bigger, slightly different understanding, and I hope a more connected and in some ways a more real approach to the anatomy. So hopefully it would lead to new understanding and also new strategies for trying to create a healthier, happier clients.
When we talk about myofascial efficiency, do you actually have to look at the way a person walks, the way they stride, what their gait looks like, and so on, and say, oh, wow, you over your life here, over your period of on Earth, you have developed some incorrect patterns in the way you move, and then do you have to correct them?
Absolutely. So you can either correct them yourself or you know, to visit a therapist. So it's looking at, you know, why if you lose the ability to bend your toe back, that's actually going to create a little bit more demand on your hip flexor muscles, for example. So if you can't go through into full toe extension and that toe off just before you kind of push off on your back foot, if you can't bend your toe back far enough, then you're going to have to bring your leg through. You're going to have to compensate a little bit. And that creates just a little bit more demand on the muscle. Because ideally, I think we work at our most efficient whenever we're in a longer stride. And that gives a little bit more stretch to the connective tissue, to the fascial elements within the myofascia. So that being the kind of the tendinous bits, the supportive wrapping material that's around the muscles. And it has a little bit of elasticity within it. So if we can get the stretch into it, then it will kind of give us a little spring. So it's kind of looking at, you know, can we regain the spring in our step is really kind of the one of the subtle kind of elements within the book.
What about what contribution, if any, does modern sports footwear play in unnatural gait and stride, even pronation of the foot? You know, so many, and with that, the emergence of I love Five Fingers. I've been wearing Five Fingers for about 6 or 7 years now. Since they came out, I actually interviewed the director of marketing, and they sent me a couple pair of Five Fingers when Vibram. So what role does the original high-heeled sneaker versus these new minimal footwear, what role does all that play in this?
Yeah, certainly with the 6 million years of adaptation that we've had, I was, you know, again, the argument within the book is that our bodies have become designed for a natural walk. So the more footwear that we put on, the more kind of instrumentation that we have, the more that we're going to inhibit some of those natural reactions within the body. So certainly by going into the motion control or the anti-pronation shoes, you can be taking away some of those mechanisms. However, that's not so by wearing the kind of the Five Fingers or the barefoot minimalist shoes, you can be regaining some of those mechanisms. However, it can also be important to make sure that your foot is strong enough to make that change. So it's, again, making a choice. For some people, the minimalist shoes, the Five Fingers are brilliant. They allow our bodies to do what we're kind of designed to do. But some of us have had injuries or other misfortunes that can actually benefit from having a little bit of support from modern shoe wear.
Do you think that the arch in most shoes and sneakers today actually promotes weakening of the muscles that create the arch, and as a result, going barefoot may actually help a person strengthen their arch?
Absolutely. They can do so. You know, it can be a downward spiral. Some people would maybe be looking at themselves or be diagnosed as having a slightly flat feet or a fallen arch or something. So they're quite often prescribed either orthotics or supportive footwear, and then it does become a kind of downward spiral because the arch is being supported. It's not having to do the work. So those muscles atrophy a little bit, or they lose some of their power. They're not getting the same stimulation, so therefore, kind of the whole system becomes a little bit weaker. So actually, by either giving correct exercise or by changing footwear can be a good idea. Kind of going back and forth between minimalist and a little bit of supportive, so you're getting some work and some support, and gradually building up to kind of weaning yourself off supportive footwear can be certainly a good idea for many people.
You know, when I first started wearing my Five Fingers, the young lady that I had on the show gave me some of the same advice that the first doctor who fitted me with contact lenses did. And he said, you know, wear them for an hour a day for the first few days and slowly get I was a young man then, and I put them on for the first day, for the entire day, and my eyes were swollen the next day. And so when we were talking about the five fingers, she said, look, when you've gone around wearing mitten shoes for 20 years and you put a pair of five fingers on, you're going to be using muscles in your feet that you haven't used in a long time. You have to go slowly with them because you're going to, and so of course I put my five fingers on and I wore them for like 8 hours one day, and I had pains in my instep. I had pains in my arches. I had pains in my feet that I didn't know I had muscles there. So, it, but what that goes to show is that most people, by wearing a mitten type shoe, that has an arch and has all these supports in it, actually allow these muscles to not do their job. And we know what happens when a muscle doesn't do a job. It atrophies. It becomes weaker. It starts to shrivel up. And next thing you know, it's gone and you can't get it back anymore.
Yep.
So, okay, so the feet play a very important role in walking. But I have to believe, and what we're going to do is we're going to take a break and come back and talk about this one. I have to believe that another group of muscles, two of them, quite frankly, which seem not to be activated as much in modern society today, also are playing a role in improper gait and walking systems in general. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking more with James Earls about his book, Born to Walk, Myofascial Efficiency and the Body in Movement. If you have an athlete and they are not doing something as rudimentary as walking properly, then it's affecting every other aspect of their performance. I don't care what kind of athlete they are. This harkens back to evolution, the process of walking, the system of walking, all the muscles, all the parts that take place and play a role in walking. Getting that right can lead to amazing progress in a variety of other areas. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio.
Performance counts, especially in the bedroom. AgeForce introduces the Ready Now Sexual Performance Patch. Feel 8 hours of increased performance within minutes of putting on the Ready Now Patch. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ready Now banner ad and save 50% off your first order.
Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health. Every week, a new study is released showing the linkage to disease from low levels of vitamin D. But throughout evolution, we have never gotten the massive amounts of vitamin D in our diet that we get today. This is why oral vitamin D is associated with toxicity and the risk of calcification of organs. Vitamin D is naturally synthesized in the skin, but dermatologists tell us to stay out of the sun for fear of skin damage. Now you can take your vitamin D the way nature intended it with Primal D. Primal D delivers a topical dose of vitamin D into the skin where it belongs. Topically applied vitamin D does not carry the risks associated with oral vitamin D. And a single bottle of Primal D should last you a year. For less than 19 cents a day, you could be taking the world's best vitamin D supplement. Go to PRIMAL-D.com to learn more. Oh, and you don't have to wait to run out of your current vitamin D to order Primal D. You can just throw it away because it just became obsolete. Primal-D.com. Vitamin D delivery the way nature intended.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Everyone knows how important staying hydrated is for your health, but have you ever thought about what's in the water you're drinking? Truth is, it's not good. Stop second-guessing and get the Clearly Filtered Pitcher Filter and drink with confidence, knowing that your water is pure. Clearly Filtered water filters eliminate dozens of harmful contaminants that can keep you from achieving optimal hydration and peak performance. Don't put up with mediocre water. You deserve better. Click the Superhuman Radio banner ad now and get an exclusive SHR package discount and free shipping.
You've already heard the hundreds of testimonials about how well the AgeForce Fat Burner Patch works. Now it's even better. AgeForce has added the powerful appetite suppressor, Hoodia. So now, while your body's in high gear burning fat, you'll have an easier time sticking to your diet.
diet. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today to get a buy one, get one free for a limited time. What do you have to lose other than body fat?
The 1-2 punch for muscle growth is increased pump and increased intensity. Research shows metabolic changes occur that yield bigger, stronger muscles. Harness the power of agmatine plus carnosine beta-alanine to give your workouts the intensity, pump, and metabolic changes that you'll not only feel but be able to see. Go to superhumanradio.com and use the coupon code SHR to get Prime Nutrition's Ultimate Stack and save 30% off. That's a savings of over $12. Get the most out of your next training session with Prime Nutrition's Nitric Oxide Plus Intensity Stack. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. Just want to let you know that we have a 48-hour sale going on right now for Primal D. And so many people have said, hey, we're going to get it, but I just want to run out of my existing Primal D. So we started this little campaign called Chuck My D. We're going to give you 15% off a bottle of Primal D. It's over a year's supply of the most advanced topical vitamin D supplement in the world. In fact, it has a patent pending right now on it. Vitamin D delivered the way nature intended. Save 15% off. Go to primal-d.com. Use the coupon code CHUCKMYD, C-H-U-C-K-M-Y-D, and throw away your current vitamin D and get with the program. Get with Primal D. We're talking right now with James Earls about his book, Born to Walk. You can get it at superhumanradio.com. What about the gluteal muscles? I have to believe that I see people walking with very splayed feet, which implies the glutes and the hamstrings are not being engaged. We have a lot of people who sit. We have a lot of pelvic tilt. We have a lot of things that lead to the lack of activation and thus the loss of gluteal muscles. Are they playing a role in our inability to ambulate the way we were designed to?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, the gluteal muscles were essential for our ability to stand up. That was one of the big changes. We first kind of got some spinal extension, and then the gluteal muscles with the pelvis started to come around to the side. So in chimpanzees and monkeys, the gluteals are pointing straight back, but for us, they kind of come around to the side a little bit, and that lets us stand on one leg, which is essential if we're going to be walking efficiently. So I think a lot of that kind of splayed walking, the feet pointing out, that can be either coming because of the hip, because of weakness in gluteal muscles, people sitting for too long. We're generally getting worldwide, I think we're getting less and less active, so our butts are becoming weaker by the year. So,
but James, don't you think that some of it, you know? One of the things I learned about the story of the human body is that it's been cultural influences that have influenced our evolution to a greater degree than environmental. And that splayed walking in some societies is very popular. We see here in the United States, you have young guys, they're sagging their pants, their legs are out, pointing, at 10 and 2. It's a style of walking. That's actually cultural influences that are changing ambulatory patterns, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, they have been in many different ways. So you mentioned footwear before, so different fashions for footwear, and now it's different fashions for the trousers and the jeans halfway down the butt. That's going to by necessity change the way that we progress over the foot. And the way that we progress over the foot is going to influence the forces that we have to negotiate with the pelvis and around the hip. So it's that kind of linkage. If I change one part of my the way in which I walk, everything else in the system is going to have that a knock-on effect. So either that splayed walking can be because I'm trying to hold my jeans up and walking with my knees pointing out, and in order to give that little bit of I can't go over my toes, either because of toe extension or ankle mobility. So yeah, the fashions, cultural influences. So maybe George Bush's quote of, you know, some people call say I walk strangely, but in Texas we just call it a swagger.
Yeah, right, so swagger.
So it can be a kind of manly Western thing, or it can be a fashion thing, or it can be a footwear thing. All of that's going to take its toll on our bodies and the way that we activate the muscles, the way that we're able to use the connective tissue. So, yeah, it's all intertwined.
What about, okay, so another big issue is posture. And this is another thing that's affected both culturally and I think psychologically. We have people that walk certain ways because their demeanor implies their posture to a certain degree. Posture has to play a role as well. And if so, when I was a young man in Las Vegas, an older gentleman told me every now and then to check your posture, walk to a wall, press your shoulders and your butt against the wall. The rest of everything else will fall in place, and walk away and hold that position. Is that an accurate way to kind of align the posture, or is that not really accurate?
It's a good kind of good enough rule of thumb. It can be as a reminder of kind of just during the day. So some people use maybe that wall alignment. Some people think of just being lifted, that kind of sky hook, some angel coming down and just pulling up in your head with a string. Or,
yeah, imagine a rope coming out of the top of your head, pulling your head up and cause your body to straighten up. Yeah.
Yeah, so something to give you a cue to kind of just to lift up and feel that extension. Not so long ago, just a couple of weeks ago, I was teaching in Newton, near Boston, and I was in a diner, and the diner had a high school graduation photograph theme, and they had photographs from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and it was amazing just to look and take a random sample and see just the influence through, in only 14 years, the change in both posture and also just physical makeup. In the 50s, almost everybody in those high school pictures were standing straight. They were slender. They looked vibrant, tall, and it was a smaller percentage by the time we got into the 90s. You see people just kind of slouching a little bit. You see them kind of adding a little bit of weight. It's quite a big change.
Well, and now so what you're talking about here is another issue that is unique to our environment today, and that is obesity. So as you put on weight, in order to carry that weight, you have to change your center of gravity to a certain degree. You have to pull back on the shoulders, overextend the spine to a certain degree in order not to fall forward and be able to walk. And the fatter you are, the more weight you put on, the greater this is, this supercompensation is. That has to play a role in people's walking patterns completely, right?
Yep, that's and also just how you feel about yourself. So, you know, with being so sometimes it's again kind of two-way street of self-esteem. The better I feel, the more upright I'll be. The more upright I am, the better I feel, and the more efficient, and I feel better in my body. And sometimes they lose some of that self-esteem, and you know, my heart drops a little, my sternum comes down,
right,
my head drops, and my body feels more sluggish, and so therefore I feel less good about myself. So you know, that can lead into its own dynamic as well.
Somebody needs to give that message to that beautiful young girl, the female singing artist from the UK, Lorde. Well, Lords, whatever her name is. If you've ever seen her at one of the award shows, I mean, her chin is almost in her chest. I mean, she's so sunken in and curved. It's like, and what she portrays is a person who is uncomfortable about the way they look. I mean, she's like, just all her body language is one of oh, please don't look at me. You know, I'm horrible. And somebody needs to tell her to stand up straight.
And maybe we've lost a little bit of that as a cultural value.
Yes.
You know, it's no longer PC to tell somebody to stand up straight. There's both good and bad within that kind of idea. But it's, you know, as you were saying about the jeans halfway down the butt, it's not culturally cool to slouch.
Yes. Yes. Hey, man, what's happening? That started in the 70s when I was a kid. That, you know, the bell bottoms and the slouch shoulders, and you know, that was like that was a very cool look. We have to take a break in a couple minutes, but I don't know that we can gather enough information about this right now. If we have to cover it on the way out of the back from the break, we will. But from what I understand that I've learned about anthropology and evolution, the body receives messages about the environment. So, like, for instance, and I may be reaching for straws here, but so if I'm slouching, if I'm hunched over, if I'm in this, what, let's say, inappropriate posture, does my body interpret that as I am not thriving, I am not well, I am not strong, and perhaps my environment is too hostile for me, and as a result, do some of the mechanisms that kick in when there's scarcity in the environment occur because of my posture? Because there was recently a study that showed that standing up straight increases testosterone in men.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. So there's been some wonderful research recently with Amy Cuddy. I think at the University of Harvard, and she did a wonderful, and excellent, very entertaining TED talk on that, and just looking at the interrelationships between our both physiology and our behavior in response to just spending, I think, 90 seconds in different postures. So she had people going into what she described as power posture, so standing legs apart with your hands on your hips and chest up, versus kind of folding yourself into a chair. And they took testosterone and other hormone readings, as well as performance tests, and we performed better after standing in the power poses. We performed more badly in the reverse. We feel different. And this, we've known this for quite some time, that it is that two-way relationship. We are our bodies, and our bodies will reflect how we feel
right
about ourselves, but then we will also reflect on our feelings about what's happening with our body.
It makes perfect sense. It really does. The body, it reads itself, so to speak. It interprets it in its environment by the way the physiology reacts to the environment. Proprioception is one of those aspects. Let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to pick it up on the other side. We're talking with James Earls about his book, Born to Walk. And you can get it at superhumanradio.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your physique is carved from sweat, reps, and discipline. It's time to show off your hard work with Quest Apparel, clothes engineered to enhance the contours of your body. The makers of the number one selling Quest Bar created Quest Apparel with your body and philosophy in mind. Every shirt, pant, and dress has an inspirational custom tagline as a reminder to yourself and a subtle message to those around you that you carve your path to be the exception, because you are made, not born. Go to questapparel.com. Enter code SUPERHUMAN to receive 20% off your purchase today. Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Keto Force is the first ketone salt that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Force and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Force banner ad today.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
In a world of advanced bodybuilding supplementation, the numbers don't lie. Fact, Iron Mag Labs is among the fastest growing hardcore supplement companies in the world. Fact, when it comes to no-nonsense, cutting-edge products, nobody delivers results like Iron Mag Labs. Fact, the Iron Mag Labs line of innovative formulation has set a new industry standard with products that are helping world-class bodybuilders reach levels they never thought possible. Iron Mag Labs is a proud supporter of bodybuilders everywhere. Discover the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements on the market. Visit IronMagLabs.com today.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
I gotta tell you something. Divine Nutrition's vanilla dulce de leche natural protein blend is the best. I mean, it's unbelievable. The flavor is unbelievable. I've been going through this stuff like it's going out of style. Check it out. Go to superhumanradio.com. Check out Divine Nutrition's products in the Carl Recommends area. We even have a special 30% off coupon code there for you. Doesn't get much better than that. Check out Divine Nutrition. Right now, we're talking with James Earls about his book, Born to Walk. It's up on the Superhuman Radio website if you want to buy a copy. Okay, getting back for a second to the minimalist shoe and heel strike. So I've just started running again. When I run in my five fingers, I have to run on the balls of my feet.
Yes.
I can't run on my heels. But no. Most people who buy a well-cushioned, you know, Nike cross-trainer shoe or whatever, they obviously run heel-toe.
Yes.
So is it a mistake to run on the balls of my feet like a panther? Should I be running more like a human and striking my heel to the ground? And I got to believe that's worse for your knees.
I think so. There's a lot of confusion within the research. So when you ask the professionals, there's it is quite a divisive a question in some circles. Many people say that heel striking is only possible with that strong cushioning. If you put on Vibrams and the five fingers and Evil Perfect minimalist shoes, it's not impossible, but it hurts.
Oh man, it hurts! Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah.
So, you know, in a way, that's our own research project. Is, you know, we can only heel strike, we can only jog if we actually have the protection on the heel. It depends, I think, a little bit on the environment. It's easier to heel strike if you're walking up or running on
grass,
on some kind of tracks, yeah. and softer ground. But certainly, if you're going out onto the asphalt and pavement, then yeah, you don't want to be heel striking. So a lot of people, I would say that jogging is an invention,
mm-hmm.
is an invention that was only possible in the 70s. Whenever we got the footwear that made it possible. And I think some of it you allude to a little bit when you described your transition to wearing the five fingers for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That you felt that the work that was happening in the muscles. So for a lot of people, going forefoot or midfoot running can be harder work in the soft tissue. So I think one of the things, the advantages with the jogging for some people is that it's the skeleton that takes a lot of the stress. That allows short-term benefits. So you can go jogging short-term and the skeleton takes the role rather than going barefoot or minimalist running, where the soft tissue is taking a little bit more of a hit.
Yeah,
and
I found that out this morning when I pulled one of my soleus muscles.
Okay.
You know that Achilles tendon and the is really doing a lot of work when you run on the balls of your feet. Mm-hmm. So
because the soft tissue is taking more of the hit. That's the importance of taking the transition. So short term, the transition to mid forefoot striking can be more difficult, but long term possibly better, provided that you're running, you know, in a good mechanical way. So looking at cadence, timing, looking at where you're striking and how you're doing it. Jogging, so the heel striking kind of idea, that can be short-term easy, but because the shock's going into the skeleton, then maybe the injuries may take a little bit longer to kind of to appear.
Yeah.
So I would certainly be an advocate for looking at the mechanics of how you run and trying to make it as soft as possible and letting the soft tissue really do its job, because it's kind of is designed to be able to take a lot of that shock. That's a lot of its role in the body, and certainly the skeleton is there to take some as well. But you don't want it. You don't want four, five, six times your body weight shocking through your bones every time that you're
right.
Striking, certainly on the pavement.
Right. Okay. So now we get into something that is unavoidable, but clearly plays a role in this discussion, and that's aging. So as we age, mm-hmm. we lose mobility, we lose joint, what's the word I'm looking for, flexion. And quite frankly, aside from the loss of muscular strength, the loss of dexterity due to these joints, ankle most notably, really creates an unstable individual that tends to fall. So,
yep.
What's the answer for the elderly person? Is it just all about mobility work for them and making sure that their ankles and knees and hips have full range of motion, or is there more to it than that? Or is it just unavoidable? Like you're going to shuffle when you get older. Period. End of story.
Oh, hopefully it's not unavoidable. So it's by keeping active as much as possible, doing the appropriate exercise, and I'm sorry, exercise that we enjoy. I think is. The exercise that you have fun with and that you smile. Too many people are doing exercise with a frown on their face and doing it because they think they have to. So I think that's one of the messages I try to get in the book, that if you lose one ability, so you mentioned about the range of motion. If you lose one range of motion, something else in the body has to do that little
compensate.
Bit of extra work.
Right, right.
Yeah, and so quite often then that starts to grumble, and then something else has to compensate in return for that. And quite often it's the secondary and even tertiary bits that we are aware of, and you know, we go to the physical therapist, or to, you know, we go to try and stretch it out, but don't quite realize that's the compensation that's screaming out. It's, you know, we need to look at the ankle mobility, or we need to look at the toe mobility, or maybe the hip. But quite often it's where the problem is coming from is the bit that isn't kind of screaming out for help. So it's, you know, it's being able to keep a general level of flexibility, and obviously also the strength is very important. And as you're aging, is just being able to stand up and go for a walk, and walking is probably one of the best and
just walk.
Exercise.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of our ancestral gifts, quite frankly, or evolutionary gifts. Real quick, we only have a few minutes. How does somebody determine if the practitioner that they're working with is trustworthy? There's a lot of people out there promoting postural work and mobility work and flexibility work and all this sort of stuff, but, you know, not everybody knows what they're talking about. How does one gauge that they're working with a practitioner that they can trust?
Being clear, I think a good practitioner will really quite welcome honest questions of, you know, so what is their training? What professional associations do they belong to? When was the last time that they had a top-up education? So a lot of associations kind of demand that you have an ongoing continuing education program. So making sure that they're staying up to date with the latest research or the latest approach to work. So being clear of, you know, who they are and you know, which associations they belong to, and you know, so that every practitioner should be signing up to a code of ethics, code of practice, and maintaining their professional understandings. So just interviewing your practitioner is going to interview you and ask about your case history. I think it's also it's good practice for the patient to interview the practitioner as well.
All great stuff. And you know what? Walking is a wonderful exercise in and of itself. You don't have to do interval work. If you are getting into the gym a few times a week and doing some good resistance training, the only thing that you need to do aside from that, really, if you're looking for a minimalist approach, is walking with some great regularity. Get a Fitbit, monitor your activity levels, and make sure that, you know, we all know when we're walking in a compensatory manner because of an injury. If you find that you're doing that, go see a good massage therapist. Go find a good chiropractor. Get that injury taken care of so that you don't sacrifice the way you walk, because it's always going to creep up somewhere else. A bad ankle could present itself as knee pain. You know, a bad knee could present itself as hip pain. And by the way, if your hips are bothering you, you'll feel pain in your crotch, not on the outside of your hip, that most people feel their gluteus minimus muscle. But don't ignore the changes in your walking pattern that you know have changed. Do something about it. Listen, James, thanks for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay. And everybody can go to superhumanradio.com to buy the book Born to Walk. It's right there on the homepage. What we're going to do right now is we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to have obviously news at the top of the hour. And then we're going to talk about how a dog could extend your life. That's right. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Keto Force is the first ketone salt that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Force and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Force banner ad today.
With your Superhuman News Update, I'm Elliot Turton. Industry lobbying boils over in bid to block labeling of genetically engineered food. Companies and organizations opposed to labeling foods that contain genetically engineered ingredients disclose $15.2 million in lobbying expenditures that made reference to GE labeling in the second quarter of 2014, according to analysis updating a July EWG report. When combined with lobbying expenditures from the first quarter of 2014, these companies have disclosed $27.5 million in the first half of 2014 that made reference to GE labeling, nearly three times as much as they disclosed in all of 2013. GE labeling opponents also spent $67.9 million to defeat ballot initiatives in California and Washington. The burst of lobbying by food and biotechnology companies was partly designed to muster congressional support for legislation that could block states from requiring GE labeling on food packages. Fathers smoking prior to conception could increase asthma risk for baby. A baby has a higher risk of asthma if his or her father smoked prior to conception. The research presented at the European Respiratory Society International Congress in Munich is the first study in humans to analyze the link between a father's smoking habits before conception and a child's asthma. The findings add to growing evidence from animal studies which suggests that father's exposure before parenthood could harm his child. The study analyzed the smoking habits of over 13,000 men and women via a questionnaire, and the results showed that non-allergenic asthma, without hay fever, was significantly more common in children with a father who smoked prior to conception. The risk of asthma increased if a father smoked before the age of 15, and this risk grew the longer the duration of smoking. The researchers observed no link between mother smoking prior to conception and a child's asthma. The rest of your Superhuman News is coming up in 1 minute on the Superhuman Radio Network.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com. NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
This is the rest of your Superhuman News Update. I'm Elliot Turton. Double mastectomies don't yield expected results. More women are choosing to have bilateral mastectomies when they are diagnosed with early-stage breast cancer, even though there's little evidence that removing both breasts improves their survival compared with more conservative treatments.
The largest study yet on the question has found no survival benefit with bilateral mastectomy compared with breast-conserving surgery with radiation. The study, published in the Journal of American Medical Association, looked at the records of all women in California who were diagnosed with early-stage breast cancer from 1998 to 2011, nearly 190,000. Women who had breast-conserving surgery had an 83.2% survival rate at 10 years, compared with 81.2% for those who had a double mastectomy. That meant that women who had breast-conserving surgery, also known as lumpectomy, did better and also avoided the risk of major surgery and the loss of a healthy breast. The study also looked at women who had single mastectomy, which was the least popular option. They fared worse, with a 79.9% survival rate, enough to be statistically significant. One factor affecting these women could be lack of access to medical care. For instance, a woman who has breast-conserving surgery typically has to go for radiation every day for 6 weeks to kill remaining cancer cells. Lower-income women may have a hard time doing that. Doctors have been increasingly concerned that women are choosing bilateral mastectomies in the mistaken belief that it eliminates their future risk of cancer. Double mastectomies made headlines in 2013 when actress Angelina Jolie had a prophylactic double mastectomy after being diagnosed with a BRCA gene mutation that vastly increases cancer risk. But 95% of breast cancers aren't caused by BRCA mutations, and most of the women who are choosing double mastectomies haven't been diagnosed with a BRCA mutation. This has been your Superhuman News Update. I'm Elliot Turton for the Superhuman Radio Network.
Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health. Every week, a new study is released showing the linkage to disease from low levels of vitamin D. But throughout evolution, we have never gotten the massive amounts of vitamin D in our diet that we get today. This is why oral vitamin D is associated with toxicity and the risk of calcification of organs. Vitamin D is naturally synthesized in the skin, but dermatologists tell us to stay out of the sun for fear of skin damage. Now you can take your vitamin D the way nature intended it with Primal D. Primal D delivers a topical dose of vitamin D into the skin where it belongs. Topically applied vitamin D does not carry the risks associated with oral vitamin D. And a single bottle of Primal D should last you a year. For less than 19 cents a day, you could be taking the world's best vitamin D supplement. Go to PRIMAL-D.com to learn more. Oh, and you don't have to wait to run out of your current vitamin D to order Primal D. You can just throw it away because it just became obsolete. Primal-D.com. Vitamin D delivery the way nature intended.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. If you knew that owning a dog could extend your life, would you go out and buy one today? Well, this actually may be true. I'm going to talk about that with my next guest, Dr. Carrie Westgarth. How are you doing, Dr. Westgarth?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
You know, the benefits of owning a pet, I grew up in a household where we had pets. When I had children in the home, we had a couple dogs. And most people, I find, especially empty nesters, once the kids are out of the home, they tend not to want, when the good old family pet is gone, they tend not to want another dog because they want to be footloose and fancy free to take those vacations to Mexico and all those sort of things. But there is some real value to having a pet in the home. And one of those may be that having a dog could actually cause you to do things that extend your life, most notably increase activity, right?
Yep, there seems to be quite a lot of research at the moment pointing towards this. And I've been funded by the Medical Research Council in the UK to investigate this further. As you said, many people have pets. In the UK, we have about 50% of households own pets and about a quarter of a household own dogs. I think it's higher in the US. You think you have about 37% of households owning dogs. So lots of us share our lives with animals. And anecdotally, we all often say, you know, how much they enhance our lives. But the science behind this hasn't really got going until the last sort of 20 years, really, it started to take off. And really in the last 5 years as well, we're starting to get lots and lots more science. It all really started in the 1980s with a researcher called Erica Friedman, who conducted some studies that found that pet owners were more likely to survive 1 year after a heart attack than non-pet owners. And that sparked this interest in, okay, maybe there are some real tangible health benefits that we can find about pet ownership. And there are three different main hypotheses as to why pets enhance our health. One of them being the biophilia hypothesis, that we need to interact with nature. That's inbuilt into us, and you know, interacting with animals can do that. Second being that they provide us with social support. So they help buffer us against the stresses and strains of life through the companionship they provide us. But the third is the physical activity hypothesis, that pets, in particular dogs, promote us to be more physically active, and there's a number of studies now that have been confirming this.
Now, your study in particular, the impact of dog walking on leisure time physical activity, describe the study. Describe it.
Yeah, well, in order to understand this study, we kind of need to understand the work that's been done before. So we know that about 30 to 40% of people in the UK are meeting physical activity recommendations of about 150 minutes per week. So that's pretty low. But we also know that people who own dogs might go out and walk them. So if you think here, you know, the connection here is quite obvious. So there's been a number of studies done across the world now comparing the health of dog owners who walk their dogs with those who don't walk their dogs and those people who don't own a dog. And what we tend to find again and again is that dog owners that walk their dogs are about 50 to 60% more likely to meet physical activity guidelines, which is about 150 minutes per week of moderate to vigorous physical activity, compared to people who don't walk their dogs or don't own a dog. So this has been shown in Australia. Hayley Christian did a lot of work, and I've shown the same effect in pregnant women in the UK. And it's also been shown in the elderly. And there were some work done by researchers called Tui and Rock showed that elderly owners who walk their dogs were over 10 times more likely to reach the physical activity guidelines, which is a massive difference.
You know, and so, let's face it, so many people know that they have to be more active, but left to their own devices, they don't do it. But when the dog is looking at you and going, okay, I'm going to do this in the house or outside the house, it's your choice. You go, okay, let me get up and walk the dog. It's real important.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that keeps coming out in some of the research. So the other really interesting thing is maintenance of physical activity. So, yes, they can get you to go out in the first place, but in terms of maintaining that over periods of time, maintaining your activity levels, there seems to be something really special about dogs there. They seem to make you want to go out in the first place, but also carry on going out, you know, later on when researchers follow it up, you know, people might have got bored with going to the gym, but they're still walking the dog.
Right.
So that's quite important. So because of all this evidence, I decided to do a study that looked at what are the correlates of dog walking. So what are the barriers to walking with your dog and what are the incentives to walking with your dog? Because although we know that the dog owners are about 50 to 60% more likely to reach physical activity guidelines, that's not actually that massively more. You'd think it might be more. If everyone who owned a dog was walking their dog every day for a good 30 minutes, they'd easily be meeting those physical activity guidelines per week. But they're not. And another review paper that I was involved with looked across the studies of dog walking so far and found that only about 60% of dog owners were walking their dog. So this leads us to the question, okay, how can we motivate people to walk their dogs more? So you said earlier, should we encourage everybody to go out and get a dog? Well, that's not quite the point of the research. The point is, how can we motivate people who have got a dog already to use what they already have in their home that's there, that's cheap, accessible, free, it's ready and waiting to go for a walk, and it can benefit them as well as you. How can we motivate them to go out? So I reviewed the studies in that area, looking at, you know, what are the correlates of dog walking across a number of different studies and tried to pull that data together.
Well, we just have a couple minutes before we have to go into our first break. But I'm just curious, the people who were not walking their dogs, what were they doing? Just letting them out in the backyard most of the time?
Possibly. A lot of the work seems to have been done in Australia and the USA, where I think from, you know, anecdotally from talking to other researchers, there seems to be more of a backyard phenomenon of dogs. In the UK, we don't tend to leave our dogs in the backyard. The weather's not great for it, to be honest. And we've probably got smaller backyards than you guys have got as well. So, yeah, I mean, maybe there is a perception that, you know, it's in the yard, it's getting exercise, but it's not about actual so much the physical exercise the dog is getting, but it's also having that time to explore new environments is very good for their mental health and well-being, as well as yours as an owner having to sit and listen to them barking in the yard.
You can usually see a dog that belongs to someone who doesn't like to walk because the dog is usually a little chunky themselves. Let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about how owning a dog could actually extend your life, improve your health. And if you have a dog, why you should start taking them out and walking with them instead of letting them go and hiding behind your bushes while they go in your neighbor's yard. That's not nice. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Your physique is carved from sweat, reps, and discipline. It's time to show off your hard work with Quest Apparel. Clothes engineered to enhance the contours of your body. The makers of the number one selling Quest Bar created Quest Apparel with your body and philosophy in mind. Every shirt, pant, and dress has an inspirational custom tagline as a reminder to yourself and a subtle message to those around you that you carved your path to be the exception because you are made, not born. Go to questapparel.com and enter code SUPERHUMAN to receive 20% off your purchase today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Whey isolate is the fastest way to build muscle by flooding the bloodstream with bodybuilding amino acids. Now, Divine Nutrition gives you the best flavors in the world of the best whey isolate available. Divine Nutrition's whey isolate comes in pumpkin spice, vanilla peanut butter, or cinnamon bun. You can save 30% off a 2.5-pound jug by using the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and look for Divine Nutrition in Carl Recommends today.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
You've already heard the hundreds of testimonials about how well the Age Force Fat Burner Patch works. Now it's even better. Age Force has added the powerful appetite suppressor, Hoodia. So now, while your body's in high gear burning fat, you'll have an easier time sticking to your diet. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today to get a buy one, get one free for a limited time. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Just because your water is clear doesn't mean it's pure. You can't see the most harmful things in your water. Tap, bottle, it's all the same. Plasticizer, chlorine, fluoride. Today's water is horrible. The clearly filtered water bottle will purify up to 100 gallons of tap, bottle, river, or stream water, and it removes chlorine, fluoride, other harmful chemicals and bacteria while saving you a load of money. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the clearly filtered banner ad and save 5% plus free shipping inside the USA.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Carrie Westgarth about how owning a dog can actually be beneficial to your health and longevity, but only if you're doing the right things with it. You know, that little joke that I made as we were going into the break, Dr. Westgarth, it's really a real situation. You know, in the United States, I don't know how it is in the UK, but in the United States, if you walk your dog, you have to pick up his poopy, put it in a plastic bag, and carry it with you back to your home. And that single step in the process of walking dogs, I find, is the reason why many people let their dog out, get invisible fence, let him poop in their own yard, and don't walk them, or do something else that drives me crazy, and that is let their dog out unattended and act like they're not watching, and the dog poops in their neighbor's front lawn and then runs back in the house.
Yeah, we have similar issues in the UK as much as we're supposed to pick up the poop as well. We have little council bins in the local walking areas. We should put the poop in once we picked it up in the bags. Generally, we don't see so much of people letting their dogs out and about from their houses to poop, but I think, you know, people, when they're walking their dogs on the pavement, they sometimes leave it behind. And this is one of the things we do have to be aware of, is how dog walking can affect, you know, the wider community as well. And people need to be responsible pet owners if they're going to be taking their dog out and about, because we don't want, you know, the nuisance of dog poop around and, you know, the health implications of that.
Was that one of the barriers that you found?
Your dog.
What were the barriers? Was that one of the barriers that you found to dog walking?
Yeah, that was one of the things that did come up were to do with other owners. So we looked across 31 different studies that I found that provided some information on this topic. And you can kind of split what we found into things like dog-related factors, such as the sort of demographics of the dogs and the dog-human relationship, the social environment factors, physical environment factors, and owner-related factors. So that, you know, social environment factors would be where I would put the idea that other people's dogs, how they behave and how other dog owners behave, can be a barrier dog walking. But generally that seemed to be quite a small barrier. That wasn't one of the main things that came out in the study. In terms of incentives, and the main thing that came out is that the strength of the dog owner relationship. If somebody has got a strong relationship with their dog already, they're more likely to walk it. And I think also when somebody's walking their dog, they build that relationship. So it only becomes even stronger through walking. So my colleague Hayley Christian on the paper, she conducted a study who compared owners who don't walk their dog at all with those who do, and found that those who didn't walk were about 10 times more likely to say their dog does not provide any motivation or support for walking. So people need that relationship with their dog before they're going to want to walk it. So anything that we can do to enhance that relationship between dogs and their owners, to make environments dog-friendly, so dogs and owners want to do things together, will hopefully encourage people to walk their dogs more and strengthen the relationship even further.
Well, I have to believe that, as you pointed out, that one of the phenomenons here in the United States, and I think you also mentioned in Australia, is because people have a larger land around their homes, maybe bigger backyards, that backyard dogs tend not to be really part of the family as great a degree as dogs that live in the home with the family. And I think that's where the bond comes from, the dog being in the home as opposed to being outdoors all the time.
Yeah, that may be to do with it. I mean, and some of the studies did look at things like size of the backyard and whether the dog was in the yard and things. And some studies found that as a factor as being a barrier to dog walking, but other studies found that didn't affect it. But that's probably because they were already accounting for things like the dog and relationship within the way they did the analysis. So once that's in there, other things, such as maybe the size of the dog, isn't so important as the dog-owner relationship. So I think, like you say, there are some things that about the types of dogs we own and the way we manage our dogs that influence the dog-owner relationship, and then that can go on and influence how often we walk the dogs.
Yeah.
So it just needs a lot more work into trying to understand what influences the dog owner relationship, I think, and that will then hold us the key for then how that influences walking. At the moment, it's quite hard to figure out from all these studies what's really going on, because sometimes they agree with each other and sometimes they say completely different things. And so, you know, you're trying to combine these results together and it can be quite difficult, but I think it's to do with the way these things are measured and the type of analysis that are done. And how do you measure the dog-owner relationship? I mean, that's, you know, in a quantitative way, in numbers, that's really quite difficult to model statistically.
Right.
So I
right.
think we need to kind of delve into that a bit more to understand how that affects motivation for walking. And this sense of obligation, that keeps coming out, this word obligation. People have to walk their dog.
But that comes back again. I think that comes back again to the reason that people get dogs. I think that people who get dogs because they are a security system with a heartbeat. These dogs mm-hmm. tend to be purchased for more utilitarian reasons. People who get dogs because there's young children in the house and we want them to experience owning a dog. Having their own dog, that dog is part of the family. That's the kind of dog that mm-hmm. sees the veterinarian regularly. The owner puts a lot of thought into what they feed the dog. And quite often, the dog, the happiness of the dog is a consideration. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah. You'd hope so. But actually, and it seems that having young children in the house and things actually is a barrier to dog walking.
Really?
It's a shame. Yeah, I think it's to do with the time that people have. So a couple of studies looked at something called the theory of planned behavior. So trying to understand how people think about health behaviors and what the barriers to that are. So like how in control they feel, how self-efficacy works, you know, so how in control they feel of their ability to perform that behavior. So if you feel that you're not that in control of your ability to walk the dog, as in there's lots of other things that need doing, and you don't really have much choice over whether you can or not, then you're less likely to walk the dog. And one of those factors, I think, is having kids in the house, you know, the time changes. I had a baby boy, he's a year old on Wednesday, and it's really made me think differently about a motivation for dog walking. I want to take my dogs out for a walk every day, but sometimes I'm not able to do it because I've got to take him somewhere and I've got to get him ready, and you're about to walk out and then you've got to change the nappy again and then it's time to feed him, and you know, all these things come into play. When you've got a larger household with children, the time for the dog might get lessened, and people's motivation, although their intention might be there to walk them, it might just not physically happen. So I think we need to think about how we can motivate people to involve the dog in the whole family, get the whole family out walking as well. Because, you know, the great thing about dog walking is anyone can do it. You know, you can be young, you can be old, you can be not very fit, you can be kids, but you can still go out and walk the dog. It's not that difficult. You don't need lots of equipment. You don't need to be really fit in order to start doing it already.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
We need to think about how we can motivate families to do that, to benefit the health of the children as well as the adults, rather than, you know, dad taking the dog out late at night, you know, on his own, having a lovely time. But are the rest of the family benefiting from that?
Being involved with the dog. Yeah, I agree. And you know what? And also teaching the children to take the dog out. It's a common chore that children learn is part of their role in the household, taking care of the pet, being a caretaker. It's their first opportunity to be caretakers quite often. And it's a very important step for them, and learning to be more on their own, autonomous. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I've got lots more questions. We're talking right now with Dr. Carrie Westgarth. We're talking about how owning a dog can improve your health. What's your Twitter handle, Dr. Westgarth, in case people want to follow you for some upcoming research?
Yeah, you can just find me at Carrie Westgarth, so C-A-R-R-I, and then W-E-S-T-G-A-R-T-H, Carrie Westgarth. That's me. You can keep up to date with my research and things I'm interested in on there.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Performance counts, especially in the bedroom. AgeForce introduces the Ready Now Sexual Performance Patch. Feel 8 hours of increased performance within minutes of putting on the Ready Now Patch. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ready Now banner ad and save 50% off your first order.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Keto Force is the first ketone salt that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Force and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Force banner ad today.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N labs.com.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Are you worried about the water you're drinking? You should be. Well, Clearly Filtered has the answer. The Clearly Filtered pitcher fills up in minutes, produces amazing water. It is the single best portable purification unit in the world. Go to superhumanradio.com. Look for the link in Carl Recommends for pure, clean water. Check them out. Right now we're talking with Dr. Carrie Westgarth about how owning a dog, and more importantly, walking your dog, can impact your health and longevity. Did, and I think you mentioned this earlier, the role of breed in the propensity of the dog to be walked? Did people who own tiny little dogs tend to walk them more versus big dogs, or what was the play out in that?
Well, this is really interesting. I really expected to find this as well. But what we tended to find is once the relationship with the dog was accounted for, the strength of that relationship, things like size weren't important or the number of dogs that they owned. What does seem to be important is the perceived exercise requirements of the dog rather than actually what those exercise requirements might be based on breed. So if people think that, you know, they say that their dog receives adequate exercise, but they can say that, and that the actual exercise they report their dog receiving varies widely. So two people might have very similar dogs, but have completely different perceptions of how often their dogs should be walked. So this is, I think, one of the big gaps in terms of how we might design interventions to encourage people to walk their dogs more. If we can change people's perceptions about how much exercise their dog needs. For example, little dogs. You know, I've got a Chihuahua cross with a pug, and yet she has a good, you know, 40-minute walk at least every day. And some people might get a Chihuahua or a pug and, because they don't think it needs
as much exercise.
Walking, but
yeah.
That's not to say they're not going to really enjoy it. Yes, you know, compared to a husky sled dog that needs, you know, really needs to properly run and have, you know, proper intense exercise, yes, the exercise requirements are probably lower. But I think people's perceived exercise requirements of their dogs is a really interesting point for intervention. And the, of the few intervention studies that have been done, they're being piloted at the moment, getting people's, you know, vets to deliver canine health information saying you should walk your dogs more, or, you know, sending people emails saying, you know, you should walk your dogs more. Then that targeting that perceived exercise requirements seems to be one way that works with this. If people think their dogs need walking more, they'll go out and walk. And if you tell people that they need to walk more, they probably won't. But it seems to be, if they think their dog needs it, targeting that canine need for health rather than the human need for health seems to be much more effective, which is really interesting.
Isn't that funny? People will take care of their dog better than they'll take care of themselves.
Sometimes.
What role did gender play? And more importantly, gender dynamics. So men tended to walk their dogs more frequently if they were also male dogs versus women tended to bond with female dogs. Was there any indication that gender of the pet and the owner play a role in the predictability of a person to take an interest in their dog to walk them?
Not at all. No, there's absolutely no evidence. Of all the studies that we looked at, they generally found that there's no evidence of a difference. So it's not that they didn't look at it. They have looked at it and found that there's no evidence there's a difference with the gender of the dog or the gender of the person. The only place that there seems to be a slight difference is in terms of feelings of safety when out walking. So generally, people, obviously, if they feel unsafe in their neighborhood, they might be less likely to walk their dogs. And this tends to be more of a problem for women than men, according to the studies that I looked at. But generally, safety is a difficult one because also walking with a dog increases feelings of safety in the neighborhood. You know, people feel safer when they're walking the dog. When they see people out walking dogs, they feel safer in that neighborhood. And so we have to also think that owning dogs and walking dogs doesn't just have health benefits for the people who are walking them, it has health benefits for the community as a whole. There's been quite a bit of research into this idea of social capital and how dog owners and dog walkers and the way that they interact with each other, because it's well known that you're more likely to talk to someone if you're out walking a dog than if you're out walking without a dog. It stimulates conversation, it increases senses of community in the neighborhood. And that can be really beneficial for the well-being of neighborhood. If people know each other, they say hello to each other, they're more likely to help themselves out. And I'll give you an example here. I was out walking my dogs one icy winter morning. And we were walking back from the woods along the road, and they started acting really strangely. They were kind of whimpering and pulling on the lead, like right, to try and pull over the road. And I thought, what on earth going on? And then I realized, in somebody's driveway, there was a woman who had slipped over on the ice and was in incredible pain, which turned out she actually completely smashed her ankle, broken it in three places, I think. And if it wasn't for me walking along with my dogs at that moment, and if it wasn't for the reaction of my dogs, I mean, I was in my own little world thinking away early in the morning. I wasn't even awake properly. But they noticed her, and they pulled me towards her so that I noticed her, and I could help her get up and make sure she got inside and made sure the ambulance came and her husband came home and things like that. And so dog walking is not just about the health benefits for the owners. It's much wider than that. It can bring much benefits to the community as well.
When I was a young man in college, I purchased my first personal dog. And it was a Hungarian Vizsla. And
Fantastic.
Beautiful breed. And very intelligent, very pretty breed. But more importantly, that was a period of time in my life where I was an avid hunter. And working dogs need to work, or they develop all sorts of idiosyncrasies, like, urinating in the house and doing things. They become almost neurotic if you don't let them work. And so, and I, as an avid hunter, I hunted regularly with my dog, Theron. And I found that, and I don't know if this, and that my question is, do you find that people who have hunting dogs that actually hunt with them have a much stronger bond with their dog, because you're doing something very primal? This dog is helping you hunt with you, almost like a partner.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to that?
Yeah, this is not something that's been really been covered in the research so far. There's so much more we need to know. But yeah, I can imagine that any sort of activity that you do with your dog where you almost become one being.
Yes.
And you can sometimes get that feeling when you're out on a walk with them. They're kind of extensions of yourself, the way they kind of go off and investigate and then tittle back to you and then go off again. You know, they're kind of coming out from you with this invisible thread. But with things like, you know, dog sports, agility, for example, a lot of people do running with their dog now, called canicross, or you can do cycling with your dog attached, called bike during. There's so many different things now, as well as the more traditional sports such as hunting, where that bond between you and your dog can be strengthened. And most of the studies that we looked at, they were just looking at general pet dogs, and they didn't go to that level of asking sort of what sort of activities people were doing with their dogs. So that would be a really interesting point for future investigation.
Well, I was just thinking about something. I haven't thought about this in years, but Theron would get, when he knew he was getting far enough away, he would actually turn back and look at me for my signal to either come back, or if I wouldn't signal, he would keep traversing in front of me. And all I had to do was whistle once, and he would shorten up his range. If I whistled twice, he would come all the way back to me. But he always looked back at me looking for my signals, and it was amazing. It was like, as you said, and what sparked this memory in me was, he became an extension of me. I wanted him to work a certain area of the field because I thought there were pheasant there, and he would look back at me and I could direct him, even though he was 75, 80 yards away from me. It was like he instinctively knew what I wanted him to do with small hand motions and whistles. It was just anybody who's ever hunted with a dog, it's a very primal thing. It actually connects your evolutionary, fingerprints to the dog and how they've evolved as well. Let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Just because your water is clear doesn't mean it's pure. You can't see the most harmful things in your water. Tap, bottle, it's all the same. Plasticizer, chlorine, fluoride. Today's water is horrible. The clearly filtered water bottle will purify up to 100 gallons of tap, bottle, river, or stream water. And it removes chlorine, fluoride, other harmful chemicals, and bacteria while saving you a load of money. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the clearly filtered banner ad and save 5% plus free shipping inside the USA.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells.
1,000 seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert power block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced PhytoForm. PhytoForm has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Everyone knows how important staying hydrated is for your health, but have you ever thought about what's in the water you're drinking? Truth is, it's not good. Stop second-guessing and get the Clearly Filtered Pitcher Filter and drink with confidence, knowing that your water is pure. Clearly Filtered water filters eliminate dozens of harmful contaminants that can keep you from achieving optimal hydration and peak performance. Don't put up with mediocre water. You deserve better. Click the Superhuman Radio banner ad now and get an exclusive SHR package discount and free shipping.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. Net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
I'm gonna change this thing, so let's stop for a second.
Okay, let's do it.
Welcome back. If you have a dog and you're not walking your dog, you're missing out on a great opportunity. So, what do you hope people take away from this piece of research, Dr. Westgarth?
I hope that it encourages individuals to walk their dog more, is a primary one, but also encourages local authority and people in planning, who plan our environments that we live in, to think about accommodating the needs of dog walkers as well, so that people with dogs are encouraged to walk their dogs in their local environment. Because we know that if you've got a local area that's good for dog walking, you know, that dogs are allowed and they can be let off the leash, and that's really important to people to walk their dogs off leash. Like you were saying, you have this connection with your dog when it's running around off leash and communication. It's one of those really beautiful things about dog ownership. That's really important. So people who are planning our urban environments, or, you know, doing new developments or building new houses, you know, need to think about this, I think, and how they can encourage people to walk their dogs by planning for that and having good areas. Now, in the US, you have these things called dog parks, I think.
Yeah.
Which are like specific areas where people can go and walk their dogs off-leash.
Yeah.
We don't tend to have them in the UK. And to be honest, I'm quite pleased about that. And every time I see a new one coming in the UK, I'm slightly concerned. Because that does worry me in that if we're designating areas that people have to go to walk their dogs off-leash, which is where they're going to want to go there so they can let the dog have a good run around.
Right.
When they go there, they're going to be standing around chatting, which is good, but it's not very good for their physical activity.
No, they're not walking their dog.
You want people to actually be walking around rather than standing in the dog park talking to somebody else whilst the dog runs around. So it does concern me slightly, this idea of having designated off-leash areas, because then all that means is the rest of the area is an on-leash area and isn't going to encourage people to walk. So I hope that other scientists think about this and urban planners think more about the needs of dog owners and non-dog owners and how we can integrate the two so everybody's benefiting from what dogs can bring to the lives of people.
Yeah, talking about Theron has made me, for a moment, I was thinking, maybe it would be nice to have a dog again. But the problem is my life is so complicated. So, I barely have time to do the things that I do now for myself, which, get to the gym in the morning and I have to do cardio early enough in the morning where I can get to the gym. And I just can't even imagine, because I'm one of those people who wouldn't just have a dog and relegate it to the backyard and think that's it. That's adequate. The dog is fine. And I would get a hunting dog and I'd start hunting again, quite frankly. And that's what I was thinking, I haven't hunted in so long. And wouldn't it be nice to get another Vizsla and do that whole thing again? It was a wonderful experience having Theron, and it was bonding for me. He was my bud. I mean, we moved across country together to Las Vegas. I have so many fond memories of that dog as part of my life, and walking him was not a chore. I loved walking him. In fact, I was proud to walk him because at that time when I got him, it was in the late 70s, early 80s. And Vizslas had not been popularized here in the United States yet. And people would always stop me and go, is that a Weimaraner? I say, no, it's a Hungarian Vizsla. And I'd get to talk about his breeding because he was a champion, but he was monorchid. So I got him at a steal. I think I only paid $300 for him. All of his litter mates went for upwards of $1,800 each because they were sired by a dog called Champion Hooner. But because he only had one testicle that dropped, he was not a good choice, and they just wanted to get rid of him. I remember the couple so well. She was from Hungary, and she married an American guy, and they lived in New Jersey. And her name was Biba Norton, and they raised Vizslas. That's all they did. They had probably, when I bought him, they must have had 30 Vizslas on a home in New Jersey that was probably about 40 acres of farmland. And I loved walking him because people would always stop me and go, what kind of dog is that? That's a beautiful dog. So it was really very, very heady for me. It was almost he actually made up for insecurities I had about my own personality. It was like, so he was an extension of me at that very vulnerable early 20s period where you're just starting to strike out on your own and find who you really are. That dog was a very important part of my life for a very, very long time.
Oh, yes. I think definitely the choice of the dogs we have, it says something about us, the dogs we choose, and they are a part of our sense of self. And that's really interesting that people shouldn't get a dog just for that, just because, it makes them feel better about themselves. Like you said, you are thinking very, very carefully about whether you have the time and commitment for a dog right now. And people do need to think very carefully about that and where they get a dog from as well. Like you said, you researched where to get this dog from. You picked him up from a reputable breeder who was selling him for valid reasons. They couldn't use him for breeding. But you obviously researched that really well, and you thought about what sort of dog you wanted for your lifestyle. And we need to make sure that people do think about where they get their dog from. That it's from a reputable place. It's not from a puppy mill or puppy farm that are just throwing out lots of dogs bred in terrible conditions, because it's only going to lead to health and behavior problems down the line. People need to do the research into exactly what they're getting and think about it carefully. Don't ever rush into getting a dog. It's not a quick snap decision.
No, it's like having a child, quite frankly. In fact, it's every bit as of like having a child. If you get a dog as a puppy, you can't just leave them alone. You have to kennel them. You have to make arrangements. I mean, it's a real big commitment. And that's why I say, you know, I think about wouldn't it be nice to have a dog? And then I think about the realities of the commitment. And that makes it not as inviting to me at this point in my life. Maybe if I got when
but
I was a little older.
There's lots of other things you could do, though. You could go to your local rescue center and walk the dogs there if you have a spare afternoon. Your local dog shelter. Maybe there's a friend or a family member or an elderly person down the road. You know, a neighbor that has a dog that they need walking or they want some help walking their dog because they don't want to go out on their own. You never know. There are other ways that people who still, you know, love dogs but don't feel in the right place at the right time to have the dog at the moment can interact with dogs and can get out walking dogs that aren't their own. There's lots of dogs out there. You just need to find one.
Well, my neighbors do need help walking their dogs. And quite frankly, just to give you a peek behind the curtain, so I have a running kind of friction with some of my neighbors because quite a few of them walk their dogs on my front lawn, let their dog do their business on my front lawn, and then don't pick it up and put it in a plastic bag and walk off with it. They do that, you know, late at night, no one's looking. They figure, and I am like the little old lady who sits at the window. If I see someone's a dog approaching, I go and I look, and quite often I find my neighbors not cleaning up after their dog. And this infuriates me because I don't want to hit that landmine when I'm going out Sunday morning to get the newspaper. And quite frankly, a lot of my neighbors do need some help walking their dogs for sure. But that's one of my frustrations with my neighborhood. We don't have what you said earlier really rang true. There should be plastic bag dispensers and small pails so that the person doesn't have to carry it along with them until they get home. Because quite often they don't. They toss it on the street and leave it there. So if there were pails, they would throw it in the...
Yeah, you find them hanging from trees.
Yes, yes, yes. It frustrates me. On my walk,
it's the same in the UK.
I mean, when I run in the morning, there's little... It almost looks like Christmas ornaments, little blue plastic bags with dog poop hanging in trees. If they had pails every so often, people would go, oh, I just have to walk to the corner and I can get rid of it then. So I think that's critical.
Maybe you should put one outside the front of your house saying, put the dog poop in here and I'll put it in the bin for you. Yeah. Have a little bag outside.
I've actually told one of my neighbors that if his dog poops on my lawn one more time, I'm going to poop on his lawn. One morning he's going to find me out there squatting on his front lawn, and he's not going to like that. So there you go. Listen,
There has been research done into people's understanding of cleaning up, and it seems to be a subjective norm thing. If people think everybody else is cleaning up after their dogs, they do it as well. But if people think nobody is, then they won't do it. So pointing out that nobody's doing it actually can often have a negative effect. It has the opposite of the effect that you want. If people think that, well, I need to pick up because everybody else is picking up, then that's what you want people to feel. We want people to feel that everybody's picking up, so they have to as well.
A little peer pressure. Give your Twitter handle one more time, Dr. Westgarth.
Yep, it's just, I'm just Carrie Westgarth, CarriWestgarth, and you can keep up to date with my research on dog walking on there.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. It was fun.
That's brilliant. Thank you for having me.
Take care. All right, so there you have it. Both shows today had something to do with walking. Our first hour with James Earls. Get his book, Born to Walk, at superhumanradio.com. And then, of course, follow Dr. Carrie Westgarth at Twitter, at Carrie, C-A-R-R-I, Westgarth, W-E-S-T-G-A-R-T-H, to stay up to date with all of her research. Been a great show, great opener for the beginning of the week. We've got lots more good shows coming the rest of the week. Check it out. Don't forget, Primal D, 15% off. Chuck My D is the coupon code, C-H-U-C-K-M-Y, and the letter D, all one word, gets you 15% off through Tuesday the 9th at midnight. Don't miss this opportunity to get the single best vitamin D supplement in the world. Look, if you're taking vitamin D, you just need to be taking this vitamin D. That's it. Has all the benefits of vitamin D, none of the potential downside and risks associated with vitamin D like soft tissue calcification and toxicity, and a greater conversion to 25 hydroxy vitamin D compared to oral IU for IU. So you get everything you want, and everything you don't want, you don't get. So stay tuned for more information about that. Again, Chuck My D. Go to primal-d.com. We'll see you tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio.
When you talk about...